I'm Carrie Nolan. It's Monday, February 21st, and time for WQXR's Washington Report Online. Joining us now, as he does every week, is David Sanger. He's the chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times. Good morning, David.
Morning, Carrie.
David, protests in the Middle East region continue. In the period of a week, Bahrain, for example, has gone from shooting protesters to negotiating with them. What explains the change of heart?
Well, it's a little hard to understand right now what's going on within the royal family in Bahrain. But the initial thinking of the family seemed to be that they could put this down in a way that the Egyptians never managed to. And you'll remember that Bahrain, of course, is a Shia minority government, but the majority of the population is Sunni. So the army very much felt as if this was all or nothing. If they could not put this down, they'd be out of business. That was a different calculation than the army went through in Egypt. So for 3 or 4 days, we saw this incredibly brutal violence. President Obama was on the phone with the King of Bahrain last Friday night. Some of his aides spoke to other members of the royal family on Saturday. And this period of negotiation has begun. But it's not clear that that will last. And it's very possible that the army could resume the crackdown again.
On the other hand, David, in Libya, we hear reports of hundreds dead, some shot from helicopters, others while attending funerals. How serious is this challenge faced by Muammar Gaddafi, and do you think he'll survive it?
Well, you know, a few days ago, I would have said that Gaddafi would put this down pretty easily, since that's a place where the government owns all the guns. And, of course, he's been the leader of Libya for more than 40 years now. And has put down some more minor revolutions in the past. But today, it's very hard to call. It looks from the latest reports, and these are very sketchy because there are no Western reporters inside Libya, that the second largest city has been taken by the protesters. This has now spread to Tripoli. The son, or one of the sons of Colonel Gaddafi, Saif, was on the radio yesterday saying that this could turn into an overall civil war. And it's not entirely clear what the calculation of the military is going to be here, because they must view Gaddafi sort of the way the Egyptians viewed President Mubarak, which is somebody who's not going to be in office for all that much longer.
You also wrote that the White House has looked at other transitions to democracy to try and learn some lessons for Egypt. What did they find?
Well, as they looked around the world, they were trying to find examples where the army had actually managed a good transition across to a democratic government. So South Korea came to mind, as this happened in the 1980s, and the generals gradually gave up power. Same thing happened as well in Indonesia, a country that President Obama knows well, because when he was a young boy there, it was still firmly in the control of Suharto. Once Suharto fell, again, the military ran a transition. It's now a real democracy. The Philippines as well, a messy democracy, but a real one. And so they were trying to identify under what conditions could you convince the military that their long-term interests lay in actually allowing a democratic government to begin to take hold. The difficulty is translating some of these to the Arab world, which is very much a sort of all-or-nothing political space. And it's not clear how well you can manage this in the Arab world. So far, though, the Egyptian military has been, by and large, executing on pretty much all of its promises. It has made clear when the constitution would be amended. It's made clear roughly when elections would be held. The question is, do they follow through?
David, let's bring it back home and take a look at the budget. It seems like the $60 billion in Republican spending cuts are coming from a very small percentage of the overall budget. Why?
Well, the budget cuts that the Republicans passed early Saturday morning, which was about $60 billion in cuts beyond the $40 billion that President Obama had proposed, all come from about 12% of the total U.S. budget. And it's all in the discretionary spending area. So that means that they have not touched Medicaid, Medicare, defense, of course, and Social Security. And that's where all of the big significant cuts can be made, because that's where, obviously, the bulk of the budget is. And so all of this seems to be, for now, posturing. And it is posturing to see which side, the White House or the Congress, is the first to begin to discuss cuts in those areas of the budget where a real difference can be made in the size of the deficit.
We've heard some saber-rattling about a shutdown of the government. Is that possible?
I think it's about 50-50 at this point about whether the government could shut down in early March. The politics of this are very hard to manage. You'll remember that the Republicans engineered such a shutdown in the mid-90s, and in the end it helped President Clinton enormously because the Republicans were seen as the ones who were responsible for what seemed to be a pretty disorderly shutdown. So you're seeing a lot of maneuvering so that if there is a shutdown, the question is, who gets the blame?
Be interesting to watch how that all plays out. Thanks a lot, David.
Thank you, Carrie.
David Sanger is chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times. I'm Carrie Nolan, and that's the Washington Report on Classical 105.9 FM, WQXR.